Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Dorothy Gundy, Marcia James, Alice Bryant, and Phil Dierking. Later, Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
China has criticized United States President-elect Donald Trump for suggesting that the One China policy is negotiable. Trump's comments came in an interview with the Wall Street Journal published on Friday. In future talks with China, he told the newspaper, he believes that everything is under negotiation, including One China. Under the One China policy, China considers self-ruled Taiwan a part of Chinese territory. Most nations, including the U.S., have diplomatic relations only with the mainland. Chinese nationalists fled to Taiwan and set up a government on the island after losing to communist forces in 1949, ending China's civil war. The United States accepted the One China policy when it established diplomatic ties with China in 1979. The Chinese government does not have diplomatic relations with countries that have official ties with Taiwan. The United States still has strong unofficial relations with Taiwan, which has a democratic government. China's foreign ministry reacted sharply to Trump's comments on Monday. A ministry spokeswoman told reporters any attempt by the U.S. to reconsider the One China policy would be self-defeating. Not everything in the world can be bargained or traded off, the spokeswoman said. Trump's comments on the policy took place weeks after his acceptance of a telephone call from Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen on December 2nd. It was the first time a U.S. president or president-elect has publicly spoken to a leader of Taiwan since America's acceptance of the One China policy in 1979. China watchers considered the call a sign of possible closer ties between Taiwan and Trump's administration. On Sunday, Reince Priebus, Trump's incoming chief of staff, said there were no plans to change the One China policy. But he also said, "Certainly that policy is on the table if China doesn't also come to the table and work with us on trade, work with us on the South China Sea, and what's happening there." Priebus made the comments on the ABC News program this week. I'm Brian Lynn.
A new report from a British anti-poverty organization says 8 men own as much wealth as the poorest 3.6 billion people in the world. The eight men include Microsoft's Bill Gates and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Oxfam International released the report on Monday. Oxfam is a group of international organizations that seek to fight poverty around the world. The group warned that public anger over inequality might cause more political changes. Examples of such changes, Oxfam said, include the election of Donald Trump as U.S. president and Britain's vote to withdraw from the EU. The report appears as international political and business leaders meet at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. This yearly event gathers leaders, experts, and activists to discuss the important international issues. Oxfam released a similar report last year. That report suggested 62 people owned as much wealth as half the world's population. The activist group says new information from Swiss bank Credit Suisse and Forbes magazine shows that fewer people hold more of the wealth. Winnie Bienyima is the executive director of Oxfam International. She will be attending the World Economic Forum meetings in Switzerland. She hopes to discuss the problems inequality causes with world leaders. It is obscene for so much wealth to be in the hands of so few people when 1 in 10 people live on less than $2 a day, Bienyima told the Associated Press. Inequality is trapping hundreds of millions in poverty. It is fracturing our societies and undermining democracy. Oxfam offered possible solutions to economic inequality in its report. These include higher taxes on wealth and income to pay for more public services. The group also calls on business leaders to pay their share of taxes. In addition, Oxfam calls for stronger agreements between governments on fair pay for workers. Max Lawson is the head of policy for Oxfam. He urged extremely rich people to, in his words, do the right thing. We have a situation where billionaires are paying less tax often than their cleaner or their secretary, Lawson told the Associated Press. That's crazy. Last year, the release of financial documents known as the Panama Papers showed how some wealthy people avoid paying taxes. The leaked documents were a collection of information about secret bank accounts some wealthy people used to hide their wealth. On Monday, another report warned that income inequality has led to a decrease in trust in governments and other institutions. Edelman is one of the world's biggest marketing companies. Edelman said its study found the largest drop of trust in government, business, media, and non-governmental organizations yet. The company has reported on its trust and credibility survey for 16 years. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
On January 20th, Donald Trump will be sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. Hundreds of thousands of people will gather in Washington, D.C. to attend the inauguration on the steps of the Capitol building. 8 years ago, Barack Obama, then a senator from Illinois, took the oath of office.
Are you prepared to take the oath, Senator?
Many Hollywood personalities attended both of President Obama's inaugurations. They are not planning to attend the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump. Most of the guests for the Trump inauguration will come from the states that supported him. There will also be some diplomats and other international visitors. And people will attend other events as well, including the inaugural parade and costly parties called balls. As the visitors make final plans for the trip to Washington, many D.C. area businesses are getting ready for the crowds. Although some hotels still have rooms available, most are full. Among them is one of the city's costliest and highest-rated places to stay, the Four Seasons Hotel. It is charging much higher prices for inauguration weekend. A night in its presidential suite cost $16,000, and with the hotel requiring a four-night stay during inauguration week, the cost is easily $64,000. David Bernan is general manager at Four Seasons Hotel.
We have people from, you know, political parties, we have people from the business, you know, side of things here, and we also have, you know, people from banks, people from all over, really every single trade.
With the high price for rooms, come extra services.
We've got hand warmers available for them, right? Hats and things like that, just things to make it more convenient for them.
The hotel will give a gift to visitors each day of their four-day stay. The final gift will be a leather box marked in real gold with the symbol of the presidential seal. While Four Seasons visitors are receiving costly gifts, others in town for the inauguration will treat themselves to less costly souvenirs. One business, the Washington Welcome Center, is ready with souvenirs linked to the presidency. Store manager Dexter Morse expects Trump-related objects will be a big seller during inauguration week. Morse says the hottest items are Trump hats.
The Make America Great Again hat. Basically, the baseball caps are selling. I mean, we can't keep them on the shelves.
Visitors at the store do not just shop. They also talk about politics. Henry Jones is a Trump supporter. He is a college student visiting from Georgia.
I think he's got some good qualities, and I know he has his bad qualities too, and there's a lot of differences that people don't agree with. I think he'll bring a lot to the country in his economic status, and you know, the way he's a businessman, I think he can do a lot for the economy.
Business owner Devo Lee says he hopes Donald Trump will make America great again. But he will not be fighting the crowds in D.C. Lee says he plans to watch the change of U.S. leadership on television. I'm Marcia James.
The falling cost of solar energy technology is helping India increase its production of electricity. Solar energy is electrical power captured from the sun. Last April, India's energy minister, Piyush Goyal, reportedly said it is now less costly to produce electricity from the sun than from coal in his country. The drop in the cost of solar power is also helping India reach its goal of producing more renewable energy. The U.S. Energy Information Commission says India is the world's fourth largest user of electricity. However, many of its people still do not have electricity. India urgently needs to increase its electricity production. But reducing the country's high levels of pollution is also very important. In an effort to meet both goals, the government plans to produce 100 gigawatts of solar power by 2022. A gigawatt is a measure of electrical power equal to 1 billion watts. A few months ago, India launched the largest solar power plant in the world in the town of Kamuthi in the southern state of Tamil Nadu. Global News Agency describes the power plant as being the size of 60 Taj Mahals. The plant took less than 1 year to build. The power center covers more than 1,000 hectares of land. It is made up of 2.5 million individual solar panels. Together, the panels can produce as much as 648 megawatts of electrical power.
Adani Power, an Indian company, financed the building of the plant in Kamuthi. The solar plant is not India's only big effort to develop solar energy. All over the country, there is evidence that India's use of solar power is increasing. In 2015, CNN reported that India became the first country to operate an airport completely on solar power. That year, the Cochin International Airport placed a solar plant on unused land near some of its buildings.
Now, the airport no longer pays electric bills. Instead, it plans to sell its extra electricity back to the state. Other airports in India are also using solar power, including an international airport in Kolkata, which launched a 2-megawatt rooftop solar energy farm in 2015. At the beginning of 2010, India launched the Jawaharlal Nehru National Solar Mission to increase renewable energy, which includes solar. By 2022, the government wants to produce enough solar electricity to power more than 60 million homes. Last year, India joined the Paris Agreement. The UN agreement is a promise by almost 200 countries to help slow climate change by 2030. Part of India's promise is to increase renewable energy to 40% of its total. Claire Brunel is an assistant professor of economics at American University in Washington, D.C. Brunel recently spoke to VOA Learning English about India's solar growth.
They're building an incredible amount of solar, and they're fast becoming one of the biggest, the countries with the biggest solar capacity, and definitely the biggest added solar capacity. I mean, they've they've overcome the UK already, and they're on their way to overcoming Italy. I mean, it is pretty amazing.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi has supported solar and other renewable energy sources. His government plans to increase solar power production from 4 gigawatts to 100 gigawatts by 2022, according to the World Resources Institute. However, Modi's main goal is to expand electricity production using all possible sources, including coal and other fossil fuels. Modi plans to double coal production by 2020, according to CNN. The Indian government also wants to increase the use of rooftop solar panels. Cities are developing plans to use these panels to help make electricity service more dependable.
Cities like Delhi have already announced plans to place solar panels on the roofs of buildings throughout the city. For government and public buildings in Delhi, it will be a requirement. The Times of India reported that Delhi Metro, the city's underground train service, will put solar panels on the roofs of some of its metro stations. But cities are not the only places collecting the sun's energy on roofs. Rural communities are getting electricity from companies like Simpa Energy. The website Think Progress says Simpa and similar companies rent solar panels to individual customers. These panels provide electricity without being connected to central power lines. Customers can add credit to their mobile phones to use the panels. Other companies rent rechargeable solar lanterns to customers very cheaply. Companies like Simpa are opening for business in states like Uttar Pradesh, one of India's largest and poorest states. Claire Brunel says that many developing nations are using rooftop solar panels to get electricity to rural communities where electrical systems are not dependable.
Yet, India still faces serious energy shortages. The country's energy needs are growing too fast to be met by renewable sources alone. India's energy use has doubled since 2000, according to the International Energy Agency. Brunel says that by 2040, an estimated 300 million people in India will need new electricity service. New coal plants are being built to provide for this growing need. The country gets more than 60% of its electricity from coal. Reuters news agency says India has almost as much coal-related pollution as China. Brunel says the country's growing need for energy will affect whether it can reduce its levels of greenhouse gases.
If solar is capturing the growth in electricity, basically, then you're not technically changing emissions, right? You're just making sure that emissions are not increasing, but you're not decreasing them either.
She says India will probably not be able to end the use of coal and other fossil fuels completely. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA, Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. It may seem like a moment in a science fiction movie. In a fierce battle, a creature loses an arm, but then grows another one to take its place. However, this is not science fiction. It is science fact. Some fish and amphibians, such as salamanders, can regrow lost limbs and organs. As mammals evolved, they lost the ability to regrow or regenerate parts of their body. However, experiments show that it may be possible to regain that ability. Tropical freshwater zebrafish are popular pets. They are also popular as lab animals. Their embryos are clear or translucent. They can regrow damaged fins, skin, and hearts. Zebrafish are also genetically similar to humans. In 2013, the website SciNews reported that researchers had found that 70% of protein-coding human genes are related to genes found in the zebrafish. The report also said that researchers at the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute in Britain also found that 84% of genes known to be connected to human disease have a zebrafish counterpart. These researchers published their findings in the scientific journal Nature. Sanger is a nonprofit British genomics and genetics research institute. So it is no surprise that scientists at the University of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania are using tiny zebrafish to regenerate severely damaged mouse hearts. Scientist Wang Yadong is one of the Pittsburgh researchers. He and his team are studying the ability of zebrafish to regenerate limbs and organs. Wang says you can cut away about 20% of the zebrafish heart and it will regenerate. He adds that same process may be able to help humans.
So that amazing ability makes us think it's possible to borrow some of that repair regeneration mechanism and use that to help us to regenerate our heart.
Scientists injected an extracellular matrix, or ECM, from the heart of a zebrafish into a severely damaged mouse heart. In biology, an extracellular matrix is a substance produced and released by cells that gives structural and biochemical support to surrounding cells. Think of ECM as cellular stuff that gives room and board to surrounding cells. So what did the researchers find? They found that the heart muscle regenerated in days. They found something else. The healing was even faster when the ECM was taken from zebrafish that was itself in the process of regrowing damaged tissue. Wang adds that if you had to choose between the two matrices, the healing matrix is more powerful of the two.
Between the two, the healing matrix from the zebrafish heart is even more potent than the normal one.
A molecule called neuregulin 1 seems to play a major role in causing the regeneration to happen.
We did see the zebrafish heart has more neuregulin 1 than mouse heart. The healing zebrafish heart has even more than the normal. So it does indicate the neuregulin probably plays a role, but we have to do more study on that.
The next step will be to test the regenerative abilities of zebrafish ECM on larger mammals. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.